Hi, and welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting from two shipping containers outside Roberta's Pizza at 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today's show is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener and is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to www.hearstranch.com. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we are the ladies of Groundworks, Inc. We design and build gardens in New York City and the surrounding area. And this show aims to bring the culture to horticulture, even in August.
Well, culture is a good word for today's show.
That's right. Today, we're going to be talking about Vitis vinifera, or the grape, and natural home winemaking with someone that I know very well, Mario DeVito. Mario is a home winemaker and also, by no coincidence, my dad. Mario is a native of the Irpinia region of Italy and has been growing grapes and making homemade wine for more than 60 years. And most of his vintages are pretty good.
They're really good.
Welcome, Mario.
Yes. Hi.
Hi, Mario. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. Good. So we're going to go a little bit into the history of the grape, and then we're going to get you on, Mario, and to answer some questions about growing grapes and then turning them into wine.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the grape, or Vitis vinifera, is part of the Vitaceae family of plants, and there are about 24 species of the wild grape, and of course, countless cultivars that are bred for table and winemaking. And when I was doing research for this show, I was trying to find out when the earliest sort of evidence of wine making was.
Bacchus.
Yeah. But even earlier than that, actually, right. Evidence of wine production can be found in ceramic jars at the remains of a Neolithic village in present-day Georgia, dating to around 6,000 BC.
And that's not Georgia.
Not
in Atlanta. In
No. Actually, Georgia still makes wine. I live in a neighborhood that has a lot of Russian immigrants.
Right.
And there's a lot of Georgian wines on the shelves. I haven't had the courage as an Italian to purchase any yet, but
you have a cross-border, so to speak.
I do. I should try them. There's also evidence of winemaking at this time comes from present-day Iran, from 5,000 to 5,400 BC. But because the samples that they're testing are so old, the data is not 100% reliable, but if these results are accurate, then winemaking would have originated in present-day Georgia and then sort of spread its way south to Greece and then Italy. Scientists also believe that whatever winemaking took place in these ancient times, the vintners were using the wild grape, Vitis vinifera. Real cultivation didn't take place until much later. In fact, archaeological evidence for the earliest domestication of grapes points to a time of around 3200 BC in the Near East. There was also wine cultivation in ancient Egypt around 3000 BC, where the wine played an important ceremonial role. And most Egyptian wine was actually red, but there was some evidence that they might have had white wine in that period as well. Now, nobody knows exactly when wine was first introduced in ancient Greece. It's a drink that's associated with Greece very much. But it was known that the Minoans, the Greek ancestors who lived around 2700 BC, had wine, were making wine, and it's definitely, you know, an important part of Greek culture. Now, this is really an interesting fact, Alice. Because the same grape varieties used in today's Greek wines have been growing in Greece and nowhere else for centuries, modern Greek wine is believed to be very similar to its ancient counterpart.
So it hasn't changed much horticulturally.
No, and probably wine drinks would say it hasn't gotten much better.
Yeah.
In 2000 years. I know, I'm a snob. Let's get into the Romans. Now, ancient Rome, when the Romans got their hands on winemaking, they really turned it into an art and a science. It was a huge part of the Roman diet and for all classes, And as the Roman Empire grew, various provinces began competing with each other and with Rome itself in producing the best quality wines. And it was during this period that there was revolutions in grape growing and harvesting technologies that are still being used today. The Romans developed the bottles and the barrels that are used for the first time for storage and for shipping, and they developed the appellation system that was, you know, developed to track the geographical areas of grapes where certain wines were grown. So most of Europe's most famous winemaking regions were established by the Romans.
Sure.
Which is really interesting.
That's why they kept spreading their empire.
Yeah. They needed to give those soldiers a lot of heavy drink to keep them moving north.
Keep moving north.
You know, right. Just follow
and
the
west.
Wine. So, actually, this is also an interesting fact. A bottle of Roman wine was discovered in a sarcophagus in Germany, which is very interesting. The Germans were drinking Italian wine then, too. Mm-hmm. It was found in the late 1800s, and the contents are actually preserved. Mm-hmm. This bottle dates from around 327 AD, and the wine is topped with a viscous liquid believed to be olive oil. So adding olive oil was a common way of preserving wine at the time. The oil floated to the top of the bottle and kept the wine from evaporating. And apparently, it was more effective than a cork plug. It kept the contents of this bottle intact for almost 2,000 years.
Do you know when that was found?
That was found in the 1800s.
In the 1800s, right.
So it's 2,000 years old, and it's still liquid. It hasn't evaporated.
Yeah.
So then, of course, you know, wine continued to be made. In medieval Europe, it was a drink of the royalty, the nobility, the priesthood, of course, and the merchants. The peasant classes drank mostly ale because they could make it at home cheaply.
Uh-huh.
Of course, it's a big part of the Catholic ceremony, and monasteries throughout Europe became the main wine producers and exporters, particularly the Benedictines in France and in Germany. And they had white and red wine in medieval society. And wine then was actually drunk while it was very young. And it was flavored with spices and honey, and it was actually watered down. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't this purity that we sort of associate with great wine that
That's
today.
How I learned to drink wine was water, the French way, my father would.
With a little bit of water.
Yeah.
And of course, the grapes were brought to the Americas by the Spanish explorers to provide wine for the Catholic ceremony and also for the priests to drink privately, I'm sure. And for centuries, American wine was considered sort of second rate in comparison to European varieties. But I think that that is changing a lot. And what I found really interesting from a horticultural point of view is that the Vitis vinifera, or the native grape of the Eurasian region, was bred with our Native American grape species when it was brought over here. And it created these hybrids that helped make the grape resistant to that horrible insect pest that grapes are prone to called phylloxera.
Right.
This phylloxera had decimated Europe's vineyards. Mm-hmm. So the American rootstocks actually saved and helped reestablish their European vineyards.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
American hardiness kind of, you know, improved upon the European, you know, varieties. So I thought that was a kind of nice way
nice
to...
Nice marriage, right.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk now about Mario, who's on the line, and who has been making grapes for several years. And he actually taught a class a few years ago at the Horticultural Society of New York. And he does this by blending different California grapes and using techniques for preservation that would have been familiar to the ancient Romans.
That's right.
Now, Mario's family comes, and Carmen's family comes out of Naples, outside of Naples.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very long tradition. And tell us, Mario, when is the best time of the year to plant grapes? Let's talk first with, before we make it, let's talk about the vine and the grape.
Well, the best time when to plant the branches, if you can select the grape that you want, you know, from people that they sell grapes, vine, or branches, or whatever, is the best time is in March.
In March.
February, March, when the branch, the dormant.
Okay.
So you could plant in the ground, or you could plant into the plastic vase or terracotta vase or whatever. So you plant, you cut the branch, and you put like a 2, 3, 4 inches over the last year branch, and then you could the new shoot.
Okay.
So it has to be some part of the bottom of the old last year branch.
Okay.
Okay, and you plant into this vase, and you water it, mm-hmm. okay? And or you could put them in the ground, like I say, and then it water it, and then maybe next year you're able to plant, replant, I should say.
Okay.
Anything. When you replant again, it has to be also in March, April. So when it comes to October, you prune because the shoots come out at like a 3-4 different heights. So you shoot and you cut the new one and leave it 3-4 heights on the branch. Okay. That's one and so forth. Okay?
Okay. So what are the best conditions then for grapes to grow in?
Well, the best condition to grow grapes has to be a dry soil, like a hilly kind of California kind of, and if sandy kind of dirt or land, it doesn't make a good wine. It has to be hilly, and so that the soil is dry, is mm-hmm. no water.
Okay, so kind of the soil needs to be loamy and a little gravelly.
Yes.
And they like to grow on slopes and hillsides, right?
Exactly.
Okay, and good air circulation and good drainage.
Absolutely, it has to be a rocky kind of soil, and then it'd be much good quality wine.
Okay, and what kind of fertilizer, Mario?
Well, usually what I come from, we not use fertilizer per se chemical. We used to use manure, in other words, whatever the cow or the horses, so we used to dig around the plant that put some of this cow manure or horse manure.
Compost, good.
Compost,
okay.
Yeah.
So, and then do you do that if you're using the cutting, you can use that same sort of fertilizer as well, organic?
Well, when you could do the cutting, you don't put any because it got too much acid over there, so the plant is new and you don't need it. Just to plant dirt, it's just fine.
Okay. Regular garden soil, as long as it drains well, right?
Exactly.
Because the fertilizer, even a natural one, could burn the new cutting.
Exactly, because, okay. You know, usually if you put this compost, it got acid in and, you know, never going to root
too much.
Anything.
Right.
Yeah, and it's important to note that you don't take the manure directly from the animal. It has to be composted. Any
exactly.
manure cannot
well,
be...
usually. They used to take the from the animal, you know, the from the eggs that they used
to... Oh, from the bedding. The bedding.
And so on
okay.
and so forth. And they used to put it into the big tank, and they stay over there.
Oh, so it really has to be composted manure, you know. It
exactly.
can't be
you
fresh.
You cannot take it from the animals that put it next to the plant, no.
Yeah.
We have to make that clear. Otherwise, okay. People might go around following cows. And
now,
right.
I know this is a big topic of conversation in Carmen's family, is the pruning of the vines, Mario. You have many, many opinions on this. Tell us about how to prune the vines.
Well, after, like I say, you plant and there's a new shoot, you should, you put them, let's say, in the ground. Now it's no more in the vase, it's in the ground, okay?
Uh-huh.
So you plant like about 6 feet apart, 8 feet, 10 feet, depends the quality of the grape vine. So when it's on the ground and the new shoot come up, usually that take like a 5, 6, 7 shoot. So you cut back the shoots and you leave it maximum 3 or 4 shoots, and you leave 3-4 highs on the new shoots, and the rest you cut it down, and then you tie it with a willow tree kind of thing, so some natural kind of rope.
Okay.
But this is basically the way you treat, and you cut it down the new shoot. You can cut the new shoot like maybe January, February. Depend on the condition. If it's you in New York, you cannot cut in January or February because it's very cold.
Right.
So it freezes the cutting. So you cut them in like March, April. Perfume California, you can cut in December, January, February, so on and so forth.
Yes, okay? Because if you prune, the sap starts running.
Right.
So exactly. You got you got to prune it when it's dormant.
Dormant, right.
Yeah.
Before it leaves out.
You cannot prune later in April because and then all the juice, all the sap come out.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So you got to catch it the right time to prune.
If you cut it too late, then it will be really bad for the vine.
And
I happen to have a vine that my dad planted many years ago, and my uncle comes and just does it at the right time.
Yeah, he just magically
whether I want it or not. Robin calls him the grape fairy.
Yeah.
He comes and he prunes it. But for those of you who don't have an Uncle Nunzio who comes and appears at the right time, it's really important to pay attention to the weather and to what's happening on the vine, you know?
Yeah.
What
about the pergolas? Like the vine on the pergola. That's, you know, kind of...
It's the same principle. It's the same, basically the same principle. The only thing on the pergola, you leave a little new branch. So this way, whatever pergola you make, you have enough shade, because if you leave a few on top of the pergola, and then you now have enough leaf and new shoot. So you can leave a little more branch, like the vine that you plant in the ground, you leave a 3, 4, 2, depends on the vine.
Right.
On the pergola, you leave a little more. But still, you're going to leave it 3, 4 eyes on the new shoot.
Just in case if you only leave one and that eye is dead, because remember, you're cutting,
you're not going to
have nothing.
Have any grape or anything.
So tell us a little bit about the difference between how to grow table grapes versus wine grapes. There's a little bit of difference in how you grow them.
Well, the principle of the plantation, everything is the same. With the exception of the eating grape, the way we make it in Italy, also in California, other parts of the world, it's a more delicate grape because it's, you know, the it's bigger, okay?
Yes.
And it's got it's a more sweet, and easily to attack by mosquitoes or other bugs.
Insects.
So you plant a little high, not too low to the ground. You plant like eight feet high, and then. The principle of the cutting and everything is the same.
Okay.
So what you do, and then this usually in Italy we cover.
You cover
net.
It.
It was some kind of net, I don't know, like a mesh,
cloth, a shade
say.
Cloth or something, a shade cloth? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, like a shade cloth that you to protect from environmental kind of problem, like a... You know, come like hail. You know, ice. For, you know, and
heavy rain.
Destroy that. So you put that one over, and that's why then in the region of Puglia, that they grow very very fine Muscatel kind of grape
for eating.
For eating grapes, yes. And you when you cover and then you can cut some of the leaf and the branches, so this way when you look at it, it's gold, like a, really, really like a gold.
Wow.
It's not that. The spray is the same principle with the spray and everything.
Okay, and then wine, if you want to grow grapes for winemaking, don't you grow them much lower to the ground? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, the grapes that you make, the wine, it's you grow low. In other words, closer to the ground, you get the heat from the dirt, from the ground, so you get more sugar into the grape.
Okay, I understand.
Because the ground, the sun hit the soil and come back into the grape.
Right, and you cut those hard every year.
Oh yes, you're gonna cut very hard.
Whereas the table grapes, you really just find two or three main leaders,
right,
and keep those growing each year, and that's why you have to thin them every year.
Right, the vine, it's more thinner you make it, better off you get it solved.
Okay.
I guess let's talk a little bit about spraying the vines. Aren't grapes very prone to diseases?
Yeah, they're very, very. Now to spray the grape, don't matter if it's let's say a grape for wine or grape to eating, every time there rains or humidity, fog, next day you gotta spray with copper and sulfide.
Okay.
You know, it's percentage now. Can I give it to you, the percentage? But so the copper and the sulfide prevent the, for the fungus. It no fungus and no bugs go into that.
It repels the insects. Right. It repels
and that's,
them.
And
yeah,
that's
the insects doesn't go. I give you an example. The same kind of principle used for the tomato. Okay? Mm-hmm. Copper and sulfide, and you get... It's not chemical. This stuff comes from the ground.
It's
from
natural.
The stone.
Right.
Actually, they sell it as Bordeaux mixture in a lot of shops. It's called Bordeaux mixture. It's a dust.
Right.
And it has the copper sulfate together mm-hmm. in it, so it makes it easy.
That's why air circulation is so important
yeah.
with these crops. We have to take a break, Mario. We'll be mm-hmm. back with you in 1 second, and mm-hmm. we'll get into the basics of natural home winemaking, your
okay.
specialty.
And when you come over,
okay.
I make you drunk.
Very good. Thanks. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network.
Okay.
You know what you're thinking. I know I did you wrong. But I just got this feeling. Baby, please hold on. The way we used to
Okay, we're back, and you're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We are speaking with Mario DeVito, my dad, about how to grow grapes, good grapes, and how to make wine. So isn't this about the time you start making wine?
Yes. Actually, the California grape that I buy, they started picking mid-August, okay? End of July, mid-August.
Okay.
They got through... Depends the quality of the grape until September.
Okay.
So now you buy the grape, depends the quality of the grape that you want, and you bring it home, okay? And then after that, you take the grape from the box. It's a machine which separates the grape from the stem.
So, Mario, you don't take your shoes off and step on them, do you?
you got to clean your feet. So it depends how much wine you make. So you use
the separator,
raising a kind of plastic container, and you put this machine over.
What is it? A grape crusher, right?
You take the grapes that you trim inside there.
Okay.
And this machine separate the grape. From the stem.
Is it an electric machine or is it?
Yes, it could be manual. It could be electric. It depends. Okay.
Okay.
So after that, so you got all the grape into this big container. Okay, and you take that. The first thing you do, because now you inside that big container, it's only the grape and the juice.
Okay.
So you take it like a thermometer, special to measure the juice.
The
how
sugar.
Much sugar is got into the juice.
Okay.
Usually, if it's a good year, it take about maybe between 22 to 25, and then you really, really... If you don't have a good grip, it could be 18 to 20. So a lot of people that sugars and other stuff, which I know do that. I make sure when I buy the grape, I squeeze like a full grape, and they see how much sugar it's got in there.
You taste it? Is that what you do?
Yes.
Okay. So you can taste test it before you buy the grape.
I taste, so I take my thermometer with me, and I squeeze a full bunch of grape into that. It's like a tube, you
okay.
know? It's
okay.
a tube. You fill up and then you put the thermometer in, and that one measure the sugar.
Okay.
And where do you buy the grapes, Mario?
I buy usually in Brooklyn, they have a Canarsie Market.
Okay.
That you could buy, or you could go to Corrado in Jersey, which one of the largest bring a grape. I mean, you got many, many different varieties from Zinfandel to
Cabernet, everything, right?
Everything. I mean, it's got everything. You could choose. And usually what I do, I blend to get a more bouquet, kind of like a, I take a Shiraz and I put a different kind of grape. My percentage was like 80-20, something like that.
Okay. So it's the Mario DeVito blend.
Right. Sometime, like a few years ago, I blended 5 different grapes, but the wine was unbelievable good. But anyway, so after you measure the sugar, so now you got everything inside there. The stem is out because the stem, if you taste, it's sour. So you don't want the stem inside the grape.
Okay.
You want them out there because otherwise it turns the wine
a little
sour, okay?
Okay.
So now you got the sugar, you measure the sugar, let's say 25, take it just a guess. It's 25%. So you see, you cover it with a cloth, you know, any mesh, any cloth, so this way any bugs goes in and so on and so forth. After that, you wait if the weather is hot. So maybe in a couple of days, it started fermenting immediately.
Okay.
Because we don't put enough chemical fermentation or any yeast, any natural. It's got to ferment natural.
Right. And it does ferment down there. I've seen that.
Yeah, so ferment, it started ferment that you see that the grape rise and the juice goes down. So every day you go over there with this thermometer, you measure. And you see that the sugar level goes down and the alcohol level goes up.
Okay.
So when it reaches, let's say, between 0 and 5%, you take the juice out, okay? And you put them in the barrel.
Okay.
Or in the demijohn.
A demijohn is like a giant glass jug, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So after you do that,
that's right.
Excuse me?
I was just talking about that's what they put moonshine in down south.
Right. So anyway, after that, so when you put them in the demijohn or into the barrel, wood barrel, barrel is the best.
Mm-hmm.
So you leave at least maybe 18, maybe, I don't know, 14 to 18 inch low because that juice, now it keep it fermented.
Right.
Not because we bring it up to 0 to 5, it stop fermenting. No. You put them into the barrel, it's still fermenting. Or into the demijohn, it's still
It's going to continue.
So,
right.
Mm-hmm. So you have to leave
like
room.
18 inch below the top.
Okay.
So now you take the rest, all the skin, all the grape skin, and you put it into the presser.
Okay.
So you put into the press and you compress that. So now all the flavor from the skin, because actually the color and the flavor come from the skin.
Right.
So you take that and you fill up the demijohn or the barrel up to, let's say, 8 inches from the top. And you leave it, you know, you cover up with a little mesh or something.
So wait, how long did you leave it in the wine press for?
Oh, nothing, because you keep on pressing. You keep on pressing until nothing come out anymore.
Oh, okay. So you keep twisting.
So you basically the juice come out from the presser, and you add them into the demijohn. So this way, that's the power, that's the more alcohol that come from the skin and so on and so forth.
That's where the power is.
Yes.
So, and his wine is powerful.
Yes, it is. Anyway, so after you do that, so you still leave it open, no close, because it could explode. Because when
the pressure,
Yeah, the pressure of the fermentation.
Yeah.
So after that you did that, and you go... That's what I told my daughter, Carmen. You go with the ear on top of the demijohn and you see it still sizzle of it.
You have to listen.
I mean,
to
it's
tell.
Still fermented. You cannot close.
Yeah, yes. Right.
After that, you close. After no more sizzling inside the demijohn or the bottle, Uh-huh. After that, you close it with a cork, with the hole in the middle, and there's like an air, what do you call it?
It has like an air valve or a gauge, and it's a special cork.
Come out. Mm-hmm. So you put in the head valve a little bit of water. So this way, any time a bubble, air goes out, nothing goes in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because the worst enemy for the wine is air.
Right.
As the ancient Romans discovered.
Yep. So after you do that, you keep them inside there. You keep watching all the time. As if any big bubble come out. And after that, let's say you make the wine in September. So September, October, November, December, you don't touch the wine. When it comes in January, between January and February, you filter it with an electric filter, an electric pump, I should say. You filter that wine. Transfer between that Damaijuan and another clean Damaijuan.
Okay, so it's
important. Clean barrel.
So it's important that the wine has to sort of really stop fermenting before you filter it, correct?
Absolutely.
It has to completely stop fermenting.
So what it do is settle, because when you put in a Damaijuan, it's still got a lot of, skin things inside
there. Sugar and settles.
So it must be that there has to be. So you filter, you transfer one to the other, and then you fill up to, let's say, a few inches above the top.
Okay.
Like 4 inches, or something like that. So all the Damaijuan has to be absolutely filled. The barrel filled. You cannot leave no air inside there. After that, you take vegetable oil, like the Roman used to do it, and you put them on top of like 1 inch.
Okay.
And you put it back at the cork.
And that prevents air escaping.
Exactly. Air escaping go inside there. You don't want that.
Okay.
So you leave it there with the head valve on top and with the water again a little bit. So nothing's happened.
Okay.
And that's basically the way you keep it. Now, if you want to drink that wine, because you filter now in January or February, the young wine, you could drink it in April, May, you could drink.
That's the new wine.
Exactly. So if you want to, it ages the wine, and then you keep it there for 1 year. You don't do nothing else. You just keep them in the Damaijuan. On the wood barrel. Then when you decide, after 1 year, usually I do at least 2 years.
Okay.
After that, I take it and I bottle.
You bottle it.
In the glass barrel. With the corking.
Uh-huh.
With corking. And I put it in the storage. I have a machine. I can put 500 bottles on a temperature 50-55. Constantly, and that machine give me the humidity, give me a...
Yeah, it's a wine refrigerator. Yeah,
it's a kind of refrigerator, but it's special for wine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You put it face down.
Okay. Yeah.
So. And you keep in there for, let's say, I usually keep it for another year. Then I started to take it out and drink it with a friend or give it away. Some friends
So it's really important I want to stress that it has to be at that temperature, because this wine has no sulfites or preservatives. If you don't keep it at that temperature, it will go sour. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. Then you also, when you, let's say you have an F bottle, you open it up in the bottle and you drink only F. So the other F, make sure it goes into the fridge, corking again. Okay,
yes,
yeah. So, and you could drink it whatever you want, nothing got bad. But if you take that wine and you put it on the high temperatures, it's going to be vinegar.
Which is also useful.
Yeah.
you can do the salad with that.
Yeah.
Yes, but we don't need, 100 gallons of it.
Right.
Well, Mario, I would love to one day make this wine with you. I've certainly tasted several bottles that you've made, and it always makes me write, I should say.
Yes. You know, Alice, I push you to drink more, but you say half of it.
Okay. Yeah, well, because the alcohol content is probably 30%.
I always tell my friends, my dad makes great wine.
You know, Alice, it's not true, because the most alcohol left in the way I process like that, maybe it's 14. 13, 25, something like that, the most. Well, depends on the grape, the ear, the sugar, all the other situations.
Exactly. It's still to be taken with food.
Yeah.
Right. You got to take some steak, good steak, cook piece of Parmigiano cheese.
Yeah.
Then you can have a nice glass of red wine.
Well, I invite everyone to try and make some wine, and if they can get their way over to Carmen's house, they sure have a good dinner on their table for
right.
Mr. DeVito.
I left a couple of red wine last night over there. You can enjoy yourself.
We will.
Thank you, Mario, for being our guest and for helping us with the 1-2-3s of how to make homemade wine. We're happy that you could join us and share your knowledge.
Why not? Anytime you come over, anything you want to know about wine, we ready. Me and my wife, we glad to have it over.
The next show I want to do with you is how to make sausage, Mario.
I can't believe you went down that road.
I told you a long time ago about the sausage. You don't want to listen.
All right, you've been listening to Heritage Radio Network, and we dig plants.
Italian sausage.
Thank you to Roberta's Pizza.
The joke I told you last night. Okay.
All right, they can't repeat it on the radio. 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Thanks, Mario.
The show has been produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. Join us on Facebook, Groundworks Inc. We dig plants. We'd love your feedback. And we'll be posting some great resources about winemaking and wine and grape growing. Thanks for listening. See you in the vineyard.
Happy gardening.
Okay.